This is the Australian Butchers Guild podcast, brought to you by Meat and Livestock Australia, the podcast for passionate butchers.
G'day butchers and welcome to this episode of the ABG podcast. I'm your host, Doug Piper. Well, this year's not started on the right foot for many Australians around the country. Western Australia's had their hottest summer for quite a few years, and the East Coast has had the wettest summer ever. Tell me about it. I'm living it right now. As you would have seen, floods in Brisbane and northern New South Wales have caused havoc again, ruining family homes and businesses. On Monday, I was chatting with a mate who works for the Casino Food Co-op, that's Casino Abattoirs, and one third of their workers, and that's around about 300 people who work in the processing plant, have had their homes destroyed or damaged in one way or another, and a number of those families have had to be relocated to other areas, so they're doing it very tough out there. Amongst that carnage, there's also a lot of other butchers who've lost their business in country towns from Casino right through to Ballina, and not forgetting those butchers in Brisbane who also have lost their businesses again. It's going to be a tough time for these businesses getting things back open again. They're going to need nearly everything replaced and a lot of support from us. So if there's anything you think you can do, contact some of these butchers and hopefully they'll take you up on it. Just a quick bit of news before we jump in today's chat. After having a chat with a few butchers around the traps, it looks like things are getting back to some kind of normality. The butchers traded very well through January, and then February seemed to die off a little bit, and they're not expecting to sort of start picking up till just before Easter, just like usual, so let's hope things are getting back to normal. If you've got the best sausages in town, don't forget the AMIC Sausage King events are going to be starting up in your states in the not too distant future. If you want to enter your snags into the competition, get in touch with your state AMIC representative now to find out when your regional heat will be run, and good luck if you're going to be entering into that. We've also had a great record number of butchers register to join this year's Greatest Butcher on Your Block campaign. It's been absolutely fantastic to see so much support from all you butchers out there. If you missed out this time round, send us your shop details to butchers@mla.com.au and we'll make sure we get you on the next Greatest Butcher database, which will be next year. This one still runs until the 4th of April, so by the time you're listening to this, that'll all be over. So let's just hope some of your customers have been lucky enough to win some of those great prizes. Today I'm catching up with fellow podcaster and presenter Luke Leeson from The Meetup. Luke is one of the talented butchers at Goodwood Meats in Adelaide, one of the state's more innovative and artisanal butcher shops. Luke is a magician with the knives and loves experimenting with value-added products and his small goods. He's also a proud member of the Australian butchery team that will be competing later this year in Sacramento, California at the World Butchery Challenge. Welcome, Luke.
G'day, Doug. How you going, mate?
Going very well, mate. How about you? How's things in lovely South Australia?
Not too shabby, mate. The sun is shining, blue skies. It's a little bit windy, but other than that, it's all good here.
That's great, mate. Well, I'm seeing sunshine today. I can see blue skies, and I think it's about the first time this year I've actually seen this much of it. It's been absolutely terrible over the East Coast. We've had rain, as you would have seen, and flooding and everything. So, yeah, it's a nice change.
Yeah, we've obviously seen the visions, and obviously your thoughts go out to all the butchers and their shops and their families out there. But we're trying to send you some, but I was just not really sure how to do it.
It's a tough one for them. I know there's quite a few in there in the Lismore area and that, and I did hear of a couple of guys in Brizzy too that have lost their shops or part of them anyway, so they've been affected by it in some way, shape or form. But trying to reach out to these guys and see if there's anything we can do to them, I suppose, would be a nice thing to do. But it's a bit hard to do it when they're not in their shops, the phones are out, unless we've got their mobile numbers.
Yeah, that's the thing. What can you really do? You got to be on the ground up there helping them. That's probably the best thing. But how do you get up there? it's a logistic point in that.
Yeah, I think that's where they'd benefit most if you're travelling in through that area. Head on up to Lismore or through that area, Croke Casino and that, and see if they need a hand, because I'm pretty sure they'd love to see. Even the support, I think, would be it's something that they'd appreciate. So what's the Luke Leeson story? How long have you been in the trade for? Where did you first kick off?
Well, I suppose it's kind of similar to most other butchers' story. Like, started off as a cleanup kid after work, after school. So what was it, about 13 and a half, I reckon. My dad walked past a local butcher shop and saw that they had a little sign up there saying cleaner wanted. So he went in there and, you know, said, I've got a boy. He can do the job. And they pretty much, it was Dave Armstrong. So my boss now was the manager at the shop there. So that's how I kind of came to meet him. But he basically just asked how tall I was. Can he reach up there? And that was my resume. So I was tall enough for the jobs. So I started there at 13 and just cleaned up an hour and a half after school every day. I got about $50 a week. Can't remember I think I just might have spent it on cheeseburgers and I think there was just cheeseburgers that I probably bought with the money. I can't really remember, to be honest.
Yeah, right. He's been really your only the only boss you've had.
Yeah, yeah. So that must say something about him. He must be some sort of good boss, or maybe he is. You know, he is the only boss I've had, so I don't know any better. But before I started my apprenticeship, I did have a small stint at McDonald's as well. So all that, you know, I invested in all those cheeseburgers, and I thought, you know, I could probably give it a good red hot go myself. But other than that, yeah, butchering has been the only job I have had. In the immediate future, it looks like it's the only one I kind of really want to do as well.
You want to own your own shop, get into your own business, or you're quite happy to be working or managing a butcher shop?
I'm quite happy where I am at the moment. I guess I do a lot of extra curriculum butcher activities outside of the shop. So I don't mind. I spend a lot of time in the shop already. I thought if I go to own my own shop, how can I spend any more time in a shop? You know, I'm going to be bringing it home with me, doing the paperwork. And I know business is a hard slog out there. And I respect every butcher that goes out and buys their own shop. So it's definitely not off the cards. But in the immediate future, yeah, you know, Goodwood, we're going through a bit of Goodwood Quality Meats where I am now. We're doing a bit of renovations. So I'm not bored there. So I'm quite happy because there's always something new happening and I'm always learning something new. And there's always new possibilities for me there as well. So I think until the time comes, I get, you know, a little bit stale, a little bit bored where I am. But so far, so good.
Yeah, that shop's been a great breeding ground for some talent, hasn't it, over the years? Because you've also got Paul Suleiman there, who I think it's quite well known around the traps. Hey, I was surprised how old he is. He's 55. He's only 5 years younger than me. I thought he I don't know what it is. He must be eating plenty of red meat, or I don't know what it is, but he only looks around about 35.
It's his Turkish heritage, I reckon. He doesn't show many greys. That's what he says anyway. It's either his Turkish heritage with no greys or he dyes it. Yep. I'm believing the second option because, yeah, he does look young for his age and he's very modest about it as well.
Yeah, but, mate, what a butcher.
Yeah, yeah, he's a bit of a cult figure, I guess you'd say. Like a lot of butchers know him around the area and he's known as the nice guy. Mm. He's always at the meat stocks, or he's always help like lending hands at those kind of competitions, or talking to people on the phone after work. I mean, I was sitting in the car yesterday talking to another butcher, and he was sitting in the car next to me. He was talking to another butcher as well. So it's just that big community, and he's definitely at the forefront of it all.
Yeah, and you had a young girl working there too.
So we did have Kiara.
That was
a
her.
While ago. She yep. won a couple of butchering competitions, like the Apprentice of the Years. She's now since moved on. This is a couple of years ago now.
Yep.
I've been there too long, Doug, and all the years are molding into one, and I can't remember what happened in what year.
Mate, you joined the club, mate. I'm like that now, so, you know, I'm flat out remembering what I did last week. So, yeah, actually, I'm a South Australian as well, mate. I don't know if you realise. I started down in Central Markets back in 1977. For a company called New Adelaide Meats, a bloke called Howard James. He had two shops down there, Extra Quality and New Adelaide Meats. And, that such a great place to work. Like back in those days, there was something like about seven or eight butcher shops all in a really close vicinity, and they had spruikers out there, and it was all that fresh meat hanging everywhere. We had sides of lamb, sides of pork hanging up in the shop that had been split with a chopper. You know, so I had to go do a little bit of research the other day, for something that I'm working on. And I actually found a picture of the butcher shop that I started in, and standing out at the front of the shop is one of the spruikers that was actually, I don't know what he was doing out the front of our shop, probably checking out prices at that stage. This goes back to the 70s. He actually was the manager of the one across the walkway from us. So it was quite a nostalgic moment for me. It was brought back some great memories.
Yeah, the Central Markets, that's a great place to go. Like, it's, I don't know, it might not be on the tourist websites or anything like that, but if you do come to, anyone comes to Adelaide and South Australia, it's just like a cool little niche place to go to. And it's always, like, especially now, it's kind of coming back to being that little hustle and bustle, but obviously they've taken a bit of a hit in the recent years. But yeah, I don't know, it's just cool. You can go in there, it's like, buy heaps of different things. Butcher shops are always pumping. There's nice, like, little food stalls. It's just, it's, I don't know, it's just a nice little, like, gem of Adelaide, I reckon.
Yeah, a lot of people I talk to over the years, and they ask where I started, and I always say, you know, I started out at Central Markets, and it's amazing how many people actually know about it and have been there. So it's quite an iconic place, and I suppose it's a bit like Vic Markets in Victoria as well.
Yeah.
Poor old Sydney, we've got Paddy's Markets, I think it is, down there in the middle of the city. It's I haven't been there for a long time, but the last time I went there, she was looking pretty sad, and I imagine it's probably pretty sad now. But yeah, hopefully it'll. It's something that I think those sort of places, they breed a real food culture. People that love food will go there and really enjoy and embrace the whole atmosphere.
Yeah, that is like a little bit of a pipeline dream, is to have some sort of, I don't know, if like a whole butcher shop, but definitely like some kind of stand or stall or a hole in the wall down at the Central Markets, just to say that you can be in there and just experience it. I reckon that would be a cool little feather in the cap.
Mm-hmm. And mate, your career, like you've done a few meat stocks.
Yeah, I've done maybe 3 or 4, I reckon.
Wow, okay. And how did you go there? Have you been lucky enough to take out the title? Have you been pipped at the post or what?
No, I've been the bridesmaid a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Never the bride. I think I've come second twice. I reckon I've got a fourth in there somewhere and a sixth, I reckon. So yeah, it was all good fun. I reckon the I got like a little bit of a taste of it. The first one I went there was in Melbourne, and I came fourth in there. So, you know, you get a little trophy and mm-hmm. Like a cleaver trophy. And I think I just missed out on a little bit of money as well, but it kind of, you know, spurred you on for the next one. And yeah, but obviously the more you do, the more everybody else does. So the competition starts getting harder. And, you know, I always like to, I guess, push myself not to do the same thing twice and, you know, really push the boundaries of products at the meat stocks because the criteria is a little bit different. So I just try to have fun with it all. I think my display ideas was, I think the first one was an around the world. Second was a picnic, and I thought, you know, that's really unique. And I rocked up to the comp and there was 3 other picnics there as well. So I thought, all right, well, bugger this. I'm going to start thinking of some really wacky ideas and did a Christmas one, not that's wacky, but I thought, you know, Christmas in butcher shop it's quite iconic. So, and then went straight for an Alice in Wonderland themed long table with all the hosts and stuff as characters, I think Jay was the Cheshire Cat and George was that, I don't know what character it is, but it's the one that's always sleeping.
Yeah.
Jess Prowell's at the top of the table was Alice, and yeah, so had a bit of fun with that one and did some wacky stuff, nearly set the table on fire with a creme brulee, kind of little blowtorch, but, you know, added to the theatre.
Yep, yep.
In my opinion.
That sounds, I didn't actually see that one. That would have been an interesting one to see. So for those of you out there who don't know who Jay is, Jay actually, I think he runs Meat Stock. Georgie Aborzik, I think it is. Georgie's the one of his right-hand man, and he's a butcher from the Central Coast up near me somewhere, actually. He used to have a shop up at Tookley. And as I think just about everyone knows who Jess Prowell is.
Yeah, yeah. And then you had Shannon, obviously, there helping out with the Butcher Wars, and Steve, the MC, the host, he was also got a seat at the table. So
very good.
I tried to get some brownie points in with him because, you know, I thought if he's the host and he could see himself, he might bump me up a bit. But
didn't work.
Yeah, and he only got bumped up to second for that one. I think I lost to my mate Joel that week. So, you know, can't lose to a better bloke, but...
Well, true, yeah, yeah. Oh, well done, mate. Now that's very innovative and something different too. Something that a lot of butchers probably wouldn't even think of doing, something like that. So the value added side of it, of the trade, you know, it's so important today to have a value adding offering in your butcher shop. You know, we see it in the supermarkets in some way, shape or form, and they, you know, they do it quite poorly. That it's always just a marinade or, you know, something that's mass produced, poured over some you know, a bit of meat, some chicken or beef or whatever, and limited cooking instructions for it. So, you know, butchers today, it's such a huge part of their business, isn't it?
Yeah. I think going through my apprenticeship, there was like a lot of value adding, a lot more kind of ready meals, throw in the oven, half an hour, the old, you know, it's almost like the gaffer tape of the butchering world, you know, that cooks at 180 for half an hour for most products. But yeah, where I am now, I guess at Goodwood, we do value add in a sense of your like stock standard, like your mini roasts and a few little kind of oven ready things. But I guess where we're situated, it's quite a foodie area, so our customers do enjoy coming in, getting the kind of raw cut as it is, taking it home and creating that recipe, and then we're there to help them with that cooking experience as well. So I guess moving forward, like, our value adding isn't necessarily, you know, your products that are easy, ready to put in the oven ones. Like, we do a few cooked meals as well. We're not saying there's no value added in the shop, but our focus is more on that cooking experience for the customers. We add value in other senses, so dry aged, dual oil and hams, bacon. Basically, we try to do everything in the shop as possible. So we're moving into, myself and Paul, we're going through an uncooked fermented course at the moment as well. So that's why we're doing the extension. We're doing our own dried meats, so Nushinkan, Black Forest, prosciuttos, and that's where we can see ourselves adding more value into the shop.
Interesting. The whole small goods side of it for butchers, it's been a real specialty sort of thing for the, you know, the continental delis and things like that. Butchers have, you know, predominantly always sold ham or frites or frankfurts or something like that. But going right in to the more of the continental side of it is, I think, where a lot of foodies are really enjoying that type of food, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's something we can create an experience for the customers as well. You know, we've got a couple of meat slices there, like deli slices, and so when they come in and they do want to try something, you know, it's like almost like a little tasting platter there, and it's not just the walk in, buy your meat, walk out. It is that experience of, you know, chatting to the butcher, trying some new things, hopefully walking away with, you know, a bit more than maybe what they bargained for and they walked in to think. But and that's what I guess is keeping myself and maybe other butchers at the shop as well. It is a good learning ground. We're always moving forward, and it's these skills that I never thought that, you know, as a 13-year-old cleanup boy, that I would have been learning now 17 years later. But it's still, there's still more to learn, and there's still more I can learn and present in the shop. So yeah, that's what's keeping it exciting for me, and that kind of value adding side. So I don't know, is that value adding? We can just call that value adding.
Yeah.
Is it similar? Yeah.
Definitely is. You're value adding to the product itself. You know, there's so many different types of value adding you can do.
Yeah, exactly. There is with the extension going in, there is going to be more room for like, I see a lot of butchers now doing like basic cooked meals that you're going to put out in those little plastic trays. People literally just put them in the oven and it's done. So we are doing a few like that at the moment, but once the shop opens up and we get a bit more of a, I guess, like a little kitchen in there, and, you know, we have someone in there with the time to do it, it will probably be pushed out a bit further than that. So, yeah, watch this space.
Excellent, mate. Yeah, looking forward to it. I've only been in the shop, I think, once in the last few years. Well, probably about 4 or 5 years, I think it is now, since I was there. And it was such a great shop to walk into. Still had that old butcher shop sort of feel, the big cabinet in the front there, with a lot of chrome or stainless steel there. And I think the dryer was off to the left as you walked in. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's probably moved around a bit since then. It's so what we do, we have that the street window there. So like our shop is situated on it's like a street shop. So you walk in and there is a window display, and then come into the shop, and it is like a timber, it's a timber fronting shop now. So it kind of goes on that old school, maybe like European kind of look. And the shop has been there since 1963. So wow. It is a bit of an institute around there. And like you said, in the central markets, there was one day way back when, you can Paul tells me the story because I can't remember it because I wasn't even born yet. But there was, I reckon, like five or six butcher shops on Goodwood Road. So there was one maybe three, four doors down where the chicken shop is now. There was a Subway Meats up the top, which is now a cake store, a sugar and spice. So still got the old facade of a butcher shop, but the shops have just been changed. But there is a absolute mammoth family butcher. The building's still there. It's got the old bull's head on the top of the building as well. And I think it used to be, like, the shop was huge. And I think up top, Paul was saying, it used to be a ballroom or like a function room or something like that. Like, this is going like years and years ago, but it does show that, I guess, Goodwood has changed with the times. And you know, before Dave bought it, there was Mick Hammond there, and he was an institute of the community as well. So just shows that, yeah, the butcher shops were falling off the perch, but the ones that, you know, do move forward with the times and adapt to their surroundings kind of last.
Yeah, you're right. You've got to move forward. You know, we've seen so many. Well, I remember, I think it was around about 2000, year 2000, there was roughly 10,000 butcher shops nationally in Australia. To today, there's probably somewhere between 3,000 and 3,500. You know, that's how many shops have shut down for a variety of reasons. Like, you know, it's not just matter of the, you can't blame the supermarkets for everything, but by opening up more supermarkets, but there's also butchers have got older, that they want to retire, the buildings have been taken over by somebody else, so they've had to get out for a whole stack of different reasons. But there's also with the current labor shortage that we're experiencing everywhere, you know, you just can't get enough butchers. But it's something that butchers have got to continue to grow their business. You just can't sort of sit back, keep putting mince chopped sausages in the window and hope people have got to come in. You've got to give them a reason to come in the shop, don't you?
Yeah, that's the thing as well. You got to, you can't just sit there and hope people are just going to walk into your shop. You've got to give them a reason because, I mean, as grim as it sounds, people, they don't need to, you know, go out of their way to walk into a butcher shop. They can go to a supermarket and that's, it's easy for them because everything's there. So you have to be a point of difference and have something there that, yeah, whether it be the experience, whether it be the value adding or the different flavors of sausages, you got to offer something that the supermarkets can't. And, you know, customer service is a great one. It's, you know, it doesn't cost you anything to, you know, just takes you a bit of time to get your knowledge there and, you know, learn some different cooking methods. And, you know, I mean, butchers love to cook. So all you need to do, if you cook at home, and you just carry that information over to your customers, then that is a form of value adding as well, because you are adding value to your shop in that sense.
Yeah.
And that's something that I guess the supermarkets do fall behind in a bit. Because I guess they just come in, give us your money and ship out. Like, so I think that's, yeah, definitely something that people can keep in mind.
Yeah, definitely. It's a good couple of things to keep on at top of mind. That one thing you said was very, like, you know, sort of resonated with me. You know, customer service costs you nothing. It's just something that you give freely. It's advice, isn't it?
Imagine if you could charge for customer service. I know, like, plumbers and sparkies and stuff, they call you, you know, they charge you X amount of money to just get you out your door. Imagine if, you know, your customer comes in and we can charge them $50 just by talking to us.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think we'd have any customers though.
No, probably not. But we still use plumbers. We still use those guys, and they charge $50 to come out to have a look.
Yeah, and then just tell you, oh, I can't fix it, mate. You got to buy a new one.
I remember when a lot of butchers were toying with the idea of actually charging people to bone and roll a leg of lamb, things like that. I remember there was a lot of talk about, you know, charging $5 to do it. Why not? It's in some respects, but it's more of a service that you provide. But I think, you know, it's a tough one to sort of say yes you should or no you shouldn't. I think. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it'd be a hard one to get over the line, especially if you're the only one. Like, you know, obviously someone has to start it, but could you imagine the look on the customer's face if they said, oh, yeah, oh, do you mind just dicing that up for me? Or saying, yeah, no worries, it's just going to be an extra $10. Like, I can see the point, and it makes perfect sense in a trade world because we are still tradies, and that's what the trades do. But on the other hand, we are retail, so it's I guess in retail you do whatever you can do to get them in the door and make the sale, and if that means bending over backwards and spending an extra 15-20 minutes of them that you're not necessarily making any extra money off in sense, but I guess you do it for them once at a free of charge kind of thing. You bend over backwards for them once, and hopefully they come back and they are that repeat customer. So yeah, I can see the point, but I don't know how it'd go down. Yeah. I don't think it'd go down very well.
No, I got a funny feeling it wouldn't with most. I've often thought, wonder how many customers would actually come back. You would definitely lose some. They go, crikey, I'm paying enough for it. I should be getting it, buddy cooked for me at this price. Because we always get, as butchers, especially some of the older guys like me that have been around for a while, we always get, I used to buy a whole side of lamb for the same price as a leg that
but you used to be able to buy a house for $7,000. That's not a thing anymore. But the ones that used to get me were people that would buy stuff from the supermarket, bring it to the butcher, and ask if they could then bone it out, or can you mince this for me?
Yep.
Or that one was the real kicker when you work next to a big supermarket chain. Every bone in your body wants to say to them what you really think, but it's that retail sense of put on a smile and just say no politely.
Yeah. Look, we can't do that because we don't know where it's from. It might not be hygienically. Yep. Produced, blah blah blah.
That's exactly what I used.
I've had a few customers over the years, but you've got to grit your teeth, and you've got sometimes if they're a good customer of yours, and you go, yeah, no worries, but why did they go next door? I used to love the customers that had come in. I had a shop at Artarmon, my last butcher shop at Artarmon, I always remember this lady. She was a great customer. And she was the daughter-in-law of Bill Laurie, the cricketer.
Yeah.
And Judy came in one day during the week, and she said, "Doug, I felt so bad on the weekend. I needed a roast, and you weren't open on Sunday, and so I went down to the Chatswood, and I bought a leg of lamb at one of the supermarkets there." But I felt so guilty doing it, and I thought, that to me is a loyal customer.
Yeah.
You've obviously done the right thing. You've looked after them all these years, and for them to go to another butcher and buy meat and feel guilty means that I think you're doing the right thing. You're obviously looking after your customers. And she, I got to say, all I could say was, look, I'm sorry it wasn't open. I've got a life too. If you've got to do it, you've got to do it. Simple as that. But, it's not something that happens every week. But it's just that whole sense of knowing that she was actually feeling bad about it,
Yeah, you can't be there 24/7 and open as long as the supermarkets. But sometimes, we've had the same thing. Sometimes customers, they'd say you have to go, but then they go elsewhere, but then they kind of come back, and it almost reminds them on the quality of the meat that we sell. So maybe it is like a little nice little reminder for them.
Yeah, it is. It is. It definitely is. So what's next on the agenda for you, mate? You've done the meat stocks. You're doing your small goods courses and fermenting course. So what's happening?
Well, it's just recently, I reckon the last couple of weeks, it's all kind of gone ahead. But the World Butchers Challenge is definitely on. It's been in a bit of hiatus the last 4 years for obvious reasons, but it is back on. It's in Sacramento. It's the start of September. So it's not long now, but there has been a team put together to go over. Obviously, 4 years is a long time, so there has been a few admissions to the team that did compete in Ireland, all with various reasons and good reasons. So it's you know, it's exciting stuff because it is, it's almost like a, well, pretty much is, it's a whole new team and it's a whole new thought process. And yeah, it's a good bunch of butchers that are really keen to be a part of it and really, I guess, frothing at the thought of going overseas and competing for their country.
Yeah, I've heard a few names bantered around a bit, and it sounds like a pretty strong team actually. Like it's been a great competition for butchers in general. It's sort of raised the profile of the local butcher or butchers in general, probably not just the local butcher, but butchers in general. So it's been good for the trade. It's, you know, the, showing the skills of what you can do with beef and lamb and the other proteins. You know, I've got to say, other proteins. Can't say pork or chicken, mate.
I was waiting for it.
But you know, we've MLA has been a huge part of that competition. Started out, as the Trans Tasman competition just between the Kiwis and us, and we flogged them the first couple of times, and then they've come back really hard, and they've become a force to be reckoned with, especially in that scene, and they've done okay in the WBC too, I think. But in general, like the amount of countries that are involved and are so passionate about this competition, you know, it's fantastic to see that it's not just Aussie butchers and I suppose the Kiwis and the English who are really passionate about it, but there's other countries, European countries especially, who are very passionate butchers.
Yeah, it's the competition's just got bigger and bigger, and I guess, yeah, like you said, it did start off with just the Trans-Tasman, New Zealand versus Australia, and then shortly after that, the beef eaters came in, the Poms, mm-hmm. And then I think the next team to come in were the French. So, yep. And then since then, it was 12 countries in Ireland. We're looking at 16 in Sacramento. And yeah, I guess if you look at that kind of that growth from the competitions, it's only ever going to get bigger and better. And being held in America this year, it's you know, that they're going to put on a big show. It's been held in the Golden One building, I think that's what it's called. Don't quote me on that. I know it's recording, so you're going to have to quote me on it. But it's the Sacramento Kings home ground basketball. So it's like an arena. So it's every other competition has been, the last one that I did was in a trade show. So this is like a main event style. It's the most like high tech or, you know, tech savvy arena in America as well. So, I mean, I'm thinking, yeah, there's going to be lights, there's going to be big screens, there's going to be cameras everywhere. It's going to basically look like a basketball game or like a pro league sports, like a sports game. So there's going to be 16 teams out there at once, all at the same time, absolutely battling it out. And yeah, speak from experience, the spectators were going absolutely nuts. So we were situated next to the French a few years back, and obviously it's a shorter trip from was for them to get over to Ireland, but yep. They were just loud and nonstop the whole time. It's getting bigger, it's getting better. It's only a matter of time before it starts getting mainstream and puts people on the map like that.
Mm. How do you find performing in front of of a crowd, I suppose, because, you know, a lot of butchers, I've said this a few times, a lot of butchers are introverts. You put that counter in front of them, they're bulletproof and they can talk about anything, but you take that counter away and there's a lot of us out there who really struggle to put two words together or want to talk to anybody, get quite nervous in groups of people, I think. So how did you find transitioning, I suppose, from behind the counter out into, you know, somewhere where you've got just people watching you, yelling at you, you know, encouraging you to go hard, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it's an odd one because, I mean, I used to like play sports and stuff like growing up, and I think I used to have a bit of that kind of white line fever. So I'm probably a bit more extroverted now than I ever have been. And then I guess going out in these arenas or in front of crowds, it is nerve-wracking. Like, if you're not nervous, there's something wrong with you. Like, nerves are good. You know, you kind of, you feed off of them. But I mean, yeah, like the first time I did meat stock, Paul took a photo of me literally 2 seconds before I walked up on stage. And, you know, I'm a pale kind of bloke at the best of times, but I was a white as ghost, and, you know, you could see the fear in my eyes. But I guess the thing that I always try to remember is I do this every day, basically, you know, like 5-6 days a week of work. So it's nothing, the stuff that I'm doing isn't foreign to me. It's just the audience or the arena around me is the thing that's foreign. So I kind of, you know, I do feed off it a little bit, but at the same time, I just block it out. I just try my best just to put my head down into my block, and you know, I know what I need to do once I'm out there, and I'm confident in doing that. So you just got to make sure that, you know, if it is a team event like the WBC, that you check on your mates across the table and keep the talk up. And yeah, I mean, that's just a little bit of footy talk, but you know, you just got to check in on each other and make sure that, you know, they are, you know, they're there and they're present and they know what they're doing as well. So yeah, I'd be lying to you that if I said every time I get up on stage, whether it be competition or talking or anything like that, you know, I'm cool, calm and collective, and I'm 100%, you know exactly, you know, that I'm going to get out all right. But that's a lie, because every time you go up there, you got to be a bit nervous. If you're not nervous, you're not human.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I get like that when we do presentations and breakdowns and, you know, talking to people. Five or 10 minutes beforehand, you start thinking to yourself, crikey, what am I going to talk about? You know, how's this going to go today? You start doubting how well it's going to go. And as soon as you get out there, and it's something that butchers, like, if you know what you're talking about, if you've got that that experience behind you about meat in general, and you know how to do what you do every day of the week, you're doing it. So if you know what you're doing, it just sort of comes to you. It sort of just flows, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, this isn't, I guess, so much to do with the competition side of it, but once you're up there on stage, you look at other people and they're probably thinking, well, I'm glad it's him up there, not me. Or I'm glad it's her up there and not me. You know, like that kind of gives you a bit of confidence. Like, I mean, there's only probably a fair, you know, maybe entertainers and actors and stuff that really enjoy, like they go up there and it's their thing. They want to be the worst person on stage.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people want to do it. So, if you're up there and you start talking, that's half the battle.
Definitely. It takes a little bit of skill to be able to talk and do it at the same time. Took me a long time, actually. Took me ages, because I'd you're concentrating on what you're doing, and if you're talking about something, you've got to keep the conversation going to keep people engaged. And it was always good for me in particular, because I'd have a producer or a chef or someone like that working alongside of me. So, you know, well, when you've run out of something to say, they'd sort of pick up the slack, and it's like you said before, it's teamwork. It's getting the job doing and working as a team to do it all. Do you think to get to that stage, to go to the WBC, meat stock's a great intro for it?
Yeah, 100%. They are two totally different competitions. You know, there is, you know, an individual and then there's team, and there's a half an hour, and then the WBC it's almost like a marathon in comparison. It's three hours and 15 minutes. So it's definitely a great. I'm not going to call it a stepping stone, because I don't think one is maybe higher than the other or in that kind of aspect, but it definitely, all competition butchery helps all competition butchery. I think, I mean, the first, like I'd never competed before going into the World Butchers Challenge. And then I went back and I did do some meat stocks, and it did, you know, build the confidence, because it is just throwing yourself in the deep end. So I think doing anything like that is only ever going to benefit the person doing it.
Has the team come up with the name yet? Or
I think at the moment it's just the Australian Butchering Team. So I'm not sure if we're going to go for a mascot, or if you know, like a theme, or if we're just going to use George as our mascot. That's the only mascot I've heard about so far. So George. I'm happy to go with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it is early days. I mean, yeah, this team has only been put together in the last couple of weeks, and we've only got 6 months preparation. So, yeah, it is. There's been teams training for 4 years for this because of the pandemic. So they still, you know, the countries, European countries are a lot smaller, so it's easier to travel for them. But I was thinking about this just before, and it is exciting, because, yes, there is only 6 months, but you know, how many of us in, you know, in high school and, you know, all that, and you have a something due the next day and you put under pressure and, or like that in the butcher shop as well. If you get put under pressure and, you know, you have a massive order come through or it's Christmas time, you know, under pressure again, butchers seem to kind of thrive off that and we can work well. And I know what's that saying, you know, diamonds are made under pressure, and that's a bit cliche, but it has forced us to like hit the ground running. So, you know, we're on meetings every week. We're talking to each other every day. I reckon I get about 5 calls every other day from Shannon, you know, ideas, like his brain's ticking over. Mm. He's the one that's put the team together as well, so his brain's always ticking. But yeah, it's just a bit exciting in that sense because, yeah, there's not a lot of time, but we know we still have to do it. So we're all putting, you know, as much time and effort and thoughts into it as possible.
Yeah, the previous teams have certainly, or the previous Australian team have done a great job putting displays together and competing in the challenge, and they've done it very professionally too. So they've certainly laid great groundwork there. And with blokes like yourself who's been on the original team, and you know, with that experience behind it, it's a good thing to be able to share with the other guys, and you know, you'll be the leader basically, I suppose.
Yeah. That's it's a scary thought to think that, you know, I'm probably, yeah, one of two of the most experienced people of the team. And in hindsight, I've only had one Butcher Challenge on my belt as well. But, yeah, I think that whole process of going over to Ireland was a 2-year process. So, there was a lot of preparation and there's a lot of training involved in that as well. And I'm, I guess, yeah, a bit of a sponge. I try to soak up as much learnings as from past players, I guess you could call them, as possible. So, and I'll, yeah, I'm more than happy to pass on that, yeah, information to my teammates now and make sure that we can get across the line.
Mm, yeah, mate, all I can say is all the very best. Hope it all goes well for you all. Looking forward, I'm going to try and get over there myself with a bit of luck. Let's try and bring that trophy back home for the Butchers of Australia.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I know that it is a short notice, and you know, we haven't got a longer time, but you know, we're all ears for anyone that wants to come on board and support us, whether that be sponsorship, uniforms, just advice. You know, we're all ears at the moment, so it's going to be completely transparent and completely open. We want every butcher to feel like they can be a part of this team. And we know, you know, trials didn't necessarily happen for this competition because it's such short notice. But as soon as this competition's done and dusted, then it's going to be open for anyone and everyone that wants to be a part of it.
Well, that's awesome, mate. I'm sure there'll be you probably get a few phone calls over the next few weeks or months leading up to it to see if there's any, hopefully they're offering some sponsorship and some help and some ideas what you can do. Like you said, you've got to keep your ears open and you've got to be open to, you know, to see what other guys have got up their sleeves too.
Exactly right, because I think with butchers across Australia, we've all, you know, we've all got one thing in common. We just want to beat the Kiwis. So any help with that, you know, we could come 15th, that's fine by me, as long as the Kiwis come 16th. That's a silver lining for me. So yeah, if you can jump on the same page as me with that and help us out to beat the Kiwis, that'd be much appreciated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've got the same love for them too. Sorry Rod, no offense, mate. Rod Slater's the WBC chairman, I think he is.
Yeah Dory, I definitely pulled that line on him once before as well, and yeah, I could see the smile drop from his face.
No, it's the competition's going to be pretty good, I think. So yeah, it's like you said, as long as we beat the Kiwis, that's all that really matters.
Exactly right. Mm. Mate,
well, mate, I guess I better let you get back to work. Appreciate your time today, mate. All the very best. I'll look you up when I get over to Adelaide over the next couple of months anyway and catch up with you, and look forward to having a look at the shop and see what's happened there at Goody Meats.
Not a problem at all, mate. Thanks heaps for having me on.
No worries, Luke. Thanks for your time. All the best.
Thank you.
Well, that's all we have time for today, folks. So thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want any more info about what you heard here today or want to know more about the Australian Butchers Guild, just send us an email to butchers@mla.com.au. I'm Doug Piper. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Australian Butchers Guild podcast, produced by The Sound Business.